Space. It's a cold, infinite void that has long captured mankind's imagination with starry-eyed wonder and existential dread. Some call it the final frontier. Some say it's a place where no one can hear you scream. Only a lucky few have had the opportunity to look back down on Earth and see it as the small, fragile little marble that it is. Is it true that girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider? Is it true that the moon is actually made of cheese? While a big comet wiping out the dinosaurs is how we got here today, people still tend to think of the threat of a devastating asteroid strike as the stuff of Hollywood and science fiction. But it's happened many times before, and it will happen again. The question we must ask ourselves is, when? And in this technological age, can we prevent it? Or will we all go together when we go? Grab your telescope and point it towards the skies, because this week's episode is called... Oh no! Asteroids! The end of the world is coming fast. Seems like the good times never wanna last. Oh no, kinda thinking we're all doomed. But anyway, happy Doomsday.
Happy Doomsday, Renfro.
How's it going? How's your Doomsday today?
It's a beautiful day today. Took a nice little nap by accident.
Hey, that's the best kind.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I didn't realize I was that tired, but then I was late to our initial recording time. So sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm around.
How's your Doomsday?
It's good. It's pretty good. Not too much going on right now. It's kind of cloudy today.
Cloudy in LA is probably more miserable than cloudy anywhere else, in my opinion.
Yeah?
I think so, because like it shouldn't be.
Because you want to be going to
regular. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You want to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to learn about asteroids. And I want to say, you mentioned in the intro about, you know, asteroids hitting us eventually, and that will it be a small thing or will it take us all out? My hope is that it takes us all out, or at the very least takes me.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a win-win if you think about it.
At the very least, just take me.
You had a very localized asteroid.
Yeah,
it's just your apartment.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Anyway, just had to add that in.
Yeah, fair enough, you know. I think we could, if an asteroid were running for president in this next cycle, I would probably vote for it. Yeah.
It'd be more complex than the one we have, that's for sure.
And have a lot more going on up in the dome, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. we're fucked. Like this.
Well, we're not so fucked on the asteroid thing, but we are fucked in the fact that it would be nice if we were more fucked on the asteroid thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
We want to be more fucked on the asteroid thing.
Yeah.
But this episode is just about space. It was a fun one. We've had a lot of kind of heavy ones and kind of broad, depressing topics. The degradation of our journalism, at climate, the bizarre feelings we have being disconnected from the reality around us with hypernormalization. This one, it's fun. We love space. It's like Bill Nye the Science. I'm your Bill Nye the Science Guy today.
Ooh.
Or maybe you're Insane Clown Posse. Sun and the moon and even Mars. The Milky Way of fucking shooting stars. UFOs, a river flows. Plant a little seed and nature grows. So let's get into it. I'm sure all the listeners saw the hubbub online a couple months ago about an asteroid headed towards Earth. There were a lot of TikToks and CNN headlines about it, even though the percentage for it wasn't super high. It was supposedly going to impact in 2032. The reporting was a little bit exaggerated, a little bit sensational, but the threat isn't zero. I want to talk to you today about the history of Earth dodging asteroids and how we track asteroids, how we assess their danger, and what, if anything, we can do to get them to not hit us.
Does it say anything about me that when I heard that it might be 2032, I felt a sense of calm? Just like, hey,
man. So that's a good run.
Yeah, we had a good run.
We had a good run. If it was tomorrow, I'd be like, ooh, I had some things to do. But 2032,
yeah,
like,
I still want to have my party.
I can settle for that. Fair. It seems like a compromise with the universe to be like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I did feel calm about that. I was like, all right, we have a date. A date where we're getting up out of here. Yes.
Something that normally only people in cults get to experience. We have a date, December 22nd, 2032.
Anyway. I love myself. I don't want to just like eject myself. I'm just saying, like, you know, we're in a terrible time.
And we might as well all go together when we go.
Yeah.
So, first thing to know is that rocks are flying on our planet all the fucking time. Most of them burn up in the atmosphere, and most of the rest of them make impact over water. It's important to remember that most of our planet is water, and that a lot of it that's not water is uninhabited land. So, the vast majority of impacts pose no danger to mankind at all. But before we dive too deep, I'm going to define some terms for you, give you a good base. How do we distinguish between an asteroid and a comet and a meteor? And which one of those three things is the one that's supposed to give us heart palpitations? Well, let's find out. Meteors, or meteoroid, same diff, is a little space rock that enters Earth's atmosphere and burns up there. That streak of light it creates in the sky as it's burning in our atmosphere, that is what was referred to by the great astrologer Jiminy Cricket as a shooting star.
Whoa. There was an astrologer named Jiminy Cricket?
No, that was a Pinocchio joke.
Oh.
Remember?
I was going to lose it because I thought you were about to reveal to me that Jiminy Cricket from Pinocchio was named after an astrologer.
Oh, that would make sense.
Holy shit. No way. I didn't know that.
But also, I just realized that's a falling star, not a shooting star.
Yeah, falling star. Yeah.
Whatever.
That's why I thought that you were trying to make the... That's, yeah.
That makes anyway. Sense that you thought it's like, oh, wait a second. That's where the name originated. No, just a dumb... Just a throwaway Disney joke. Don't feed that back to someone as incorrect trivia. So if a meteor survives, it's stripped through the atmosphere and makes it all the way down to the Earth's surface, then it's a meteorite. Then you put the I-T-E on it. That's if it makes it all the way down.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's meteor. It's a meteor or meteoroid. Meteoroid. And it's an ite once it makes it all the way to Earth. If it makes it, it's a citizen of the Earth. And we call it a meteorite.
Interesting.
Both are small space rocks, but meteoroids burn up. Meteorites make it. This is a bit simplifying the classification, but generally the size of what we call a meteor is anything from 3 feet in diameter all the way down to like a grain of sand. Anywhere in that is generally the size of what we would classify as a meteor before it enters the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Comets are pretty similar, but a lot of times they don't enter the Earth's atmosphere. They orbit the sun, and the primary difference is that they're made up of dirt and ice, whereas meteors are just like big-ass rocks.
Dirt and ice?
Yeah.
Where the hell are they getting dirt and ice?
I don't know. Some 7-Eleven in the sky has got ice. Got some cheap ice. But there is some gray area between compositionally, sometimes what you would call a comet or a meteor. But also comets have a trail of gas and dust particles behind them as they approach the sun.
Uh-huh.
Even just out in space, not even because they're approaching our atmosphere. They just have that big tail behind them.
So comets never enter our atmosphere.
They do, but not as much. It's a very, very... There's just kind of less of them in our galaxy. So
okay.
It's really just a rule of numbers. They do. There's just so less of them that it's not as common.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when they do enter our atmosphere, they tend to break up into debris, and that is, weirdly, a meteor shower. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some crossover and definitions there, but that's fundamentally what it is. So, the thing that we're afraid of are asteroids.
Uh-huh.
Asteroids, the size classification for that is anywhere from about 3 feet diameter, where the meteor definition left off, up to 320 miles wide. So, range.
Crap.
Yeah, anything from, like, it's, like, bigger than a pebble, smaller than a planet. That's an asteroid. And if an asteroid hits Earth, it could be a plunk in the ocean or into the dinosaurs, right? Mm-hmm. No more Indominus Rex at Universal Studios. All gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now just, one more term. NEO. That stands for Near Earth Object.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
That's just like a wide classification. Meteors, comets, and anything that's coming from space can be called an NEO if it's within our... Here, I'm going to give you the complicated way to say it. It can be an NEO if it's within a perihelion distance of 1.3 astronomical units or less of Earth. Perihelion distance means the point between the NEO's orbit that is closest to the sun. And that 1.3 is basically a measurement to tell how close it is to our orbit, which is what makes it NEO. It's really just a way of being like, there's no reason to like take to something that we're afraid is going to hit it in us and measure our distance to it, because that doesn't matter. That changes. We're both moving.
Yeah.
So it's a way of measuring our approximate orbits, which helps you figure out, like, are we going to run into each other?
Yeah.
And if it's classified as an NEO, it's possible. It's near Earth's orbit. So yeah, you'll hear that one come up more.
I've always felt like this about space stuff, but this last definition, perihelion measurement, my brain is incapable of understanding how we come up with these units of measurements and how we come up with the ability to measure these things. And I think you have to be so incredibly smart in a way that I am not. And I just find astronauts so fascinating that their brains are wired to not only ask the questions, but to try and solve them somehow so well that they're able to create units of measurement so that we can even measure something that's so far away from us.
Yeah.
And to create the mechanism to get to those places. It's so fascinating to me.
Ocean spanning beyond my sight, and a million stars way above them at night. You don't have to be high to look in the sky and know that's a miracle, open wide.
For real, I took two astronomy classes in college. And from that, I learned, like, you really need to be good at abstract thought and math. Those classes, I didn't know before I took them. Those are just math classes. Astronomy classes, a math class. And it's really crazy when you break down to like how we know the things that we know. And it's like they're working with so little information, but they're able to extrapolate so much context from everything.
Yeah.
That they really piece together such complex things using data that you never would think would get you there. But
yeah.
Yeah, you have to be pretty damn smart to think this way.
But I think you hit the nail on the head, like abstract aspect of it. Like, I'll use Oppenheimer as example when they were kind of going through how his brain thinks and, you know, how he wasn't necessarily the best in, you know, straight up math in some ways, but like in terms of mathematical theory and things like that, he was fantastic. And you needed all these different types of brains to come up with the atomic bomb, because the atomic bomb is abstract. Like, the concept of it is incredibly abstract. Should it exist? No. But the fact that several brains came together to know that this could happen, but needed to figure out how to make this happen without simultaneously killing yourselves in order to make it happen.
Yeah.
It's fast. It's, if you can just appreciate it for that marvel, it's like, wow, my brain can't even... Honestly, you want to see how much of a dum-dum I am? I still get fascinated by fax machines.
Whoa, yeah. I mean, how does anything work?
Fucking magnets. How do they work?
I saw someone say online, like, if you found out your life was a big Truman Show, mm-hmm. what's the piece of technology you'd feel embarrassed for falling for? And yeah, for me, it'd be like, I'd get out of this Truman Show I live in, people would be like, you thought record players are real? You actually thought that was real? You thought you could put down a slab of plastic and music comes out?
It's actually insane when you think about it. Like, what about, how did we come to a point where sound is coming from vinyl? What is Wi-Fi? What is happening?
What's happening?
What is happening?
What the fuck?
And all the different brains that come together to figure that out. It's like, I'm fascinated by what's here on the ground. And there's people out there who are fascinated by What's outside of this planet?
This is going to sound crazy, but a thing I thought about before is, like, it's crazy to have the capacity to think that way and then still be able to be, like, a normal, charismatic person. And there's a lot of those. Carl Sagan or Neil deGrasse Tyson, where it's like, you can go on a podcast and just be, like, charming and talk in a grounded way. It's like, how? Your brain can do all this weird shit. How can you also be cool and normal?
I know.
Especially Carl Sagan, just so calm.
I know. I was just listening to Eloquent. A Mae Jemison interview on the Today Show, I think, or Good Morning America, one of those. And she was talking about what it felt like to be in space and look back and, like, the connection to all things in the universe. I don't see how you come back from that and you're just like, I'm here now. I'm here on Earth now. What?
It messed you up. And it has messed up some people. Where's that one astronaut with the diapers and this kidnapping lady? Don't have to get all into that.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
It messes some people up, I think, understandably.
I think I might be messed up because my brain can't conceive of it. But, you know, that's why I'm not an astronaut.
No, what I think is weird is people, like, speed running that experience. Like, they go up in this, like, little virgin plane. And it's like, there's the planet. Check it out. You got 2 minutes. And then you come back.
Yeah.
And then they'll have to act like they had this existential experience. I'm like, you fucking... It's 120 seconds on the clock when you're up there and you're like, oh, appreciate, absorb, internalize, we're landing.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That is really weird. That is weird. I'm about to spiral. Please bring me back.
Back down to Earth.
Bring you back.
Oh no, but asteroids are headed to Earth. Oh no.
Please kill me.
Okay, back to the dock. Last thing about NEOs before we move on to crazier stuff. If an NEO's orbit crosses the Earth's orbit and the object is larger than 460 feet across, then we call that a PHO, a potentially hazardous object. Most known PHOs and NEOs are asteroids, but a teensy tiny portion of them are comets, like I mentioned earlier. Literally, a third of a percent are comets.
Okay.
So comets are technically just as much of a threat, but there's so much less of them. There are over 1.1 million asteroids in our solar system, and over 30,000 of those are considered NEOs. So it's a little bit scary. 30,000 are within our near Earth orbit.
But I don't like those numbers.
Yeah, it's a little bit higher than I would like. But despite all these damn asteroids, the chances of them striking Earth is actually relatively slim, but it does happen. So let me tell you what it's like when it happens. I'm going to explain just what it's like if you're near an asteroid that hits. What would that be like? And then we'll get into some times it's actually happened in the modern era and before. So the proportionality of the size of the asteroid to the area that it impacts is pretty crazy. A thing to think about if you ever, like, visit an asteroid crater. Craters tend to be 10 to 20 times the size of the actual asteroid. They leave giant craters in proportion to how big of a meteor it actually takes.
Is it just because of the displacement once it hits?
Well, it's because it's the heat. It's coming in so fast that impact and the heat alone liquefies the Earth. Pushes ejecta up into the air. I'm going to read for you from astronomynotes.com because they really painted a picture. This is a description of a worst case scenario, like a near dinosaur killing sized asteroid. Don't worry, there's none of these. We are nervous it's going to hit us. This is like a once every 100,000 years at worst kind of asteroid. But this is how it would play out.
On its way to the impact, the asteroid pushes aside the air in front of it, creating a hole in the atmosphere. The atmosphere above the impact site is removed for several tens of seconds. Before the surrounding air can rush back in to fill the gap, material from the impact, vaporized asteroid, crustal material, and ocean water escapes through the hole and follows a ballistic path back down. Within 2 minutes after impact, tons of ejecta is sent flying into the sky. If the asteroid hits the ocean, the surrounding water returning over the hot material ejected from the impact through the hole in the atmosphere will re-enter all over the globe and heat up from the friction with the atmosphere. The heat from the glowing material will start fires around the world. The heat from the shockwave of the entering asteroid and reprocessing of the air closed in the impact produces nitric and nitrous acids over the next few months to 1 year. The wash from the acid rains will kill foliage, sea life, and destroy the ozone layer. All of the dust in the air from the impact and the soot from the fires will block the sun. For several months, you cannot see your hand in front of your face. A dramatic decrease of sunlight reaches the surface, producing a drastic short-term global reduction in temperature, called an impact winter. Plant photosynthesis stops, and the food chain collapses. And the worst part is that while all of this is going down, you still have to respond to Microsoft team messages as if nothing is happening at all.
We don't have to worry. We don't have to worry about this. I'm just setting a scale for you. That's a 10 out of 10. That. Scary, scary, scary.
Yeah, I hate that. Hate that.
The more realistic size asteroids we could face to expect are not civilization ending, but it isn't within the realm of possibility that they could wipe out a city, which is pretty intense. But do not despair, because there's hope in this one, unlike a lot of our episodes. You could scale down what I just described to you, like a knob. Just scale it down for the things that are could actually happen. There are asteroids we classify as planet killers. That's the crazy ones. But there aren't any of those that we are afraid of currently. Then there's city killers. And the city killers are more like, if you're right near where it hits, you're going to be vaporized. But if you're further back, you're just going to get shockwaves, broken windows, people getting thrown back, maybe some earthquakes, maybe some tsunamis. But again, for the spread of it, if you're throwing a dart at the Earth, the chance of it like hitting Los Angeles is pretty small. Even the chance of it hitting us is already small. The chance of it hitting a highly populated area, even smaller.
But it might hit the ocean, which is the majority, and that could still cause issues for folks, right? Yeah.
Still cause a tsunami or an earthquake. But it's not as bad as it like hit Tokyo.
Yeah.
So let me take you on a quick journey through my favorite impacts and near misses from our terrestrial history. As I said earlier, things fall to Earth all the time. Notable streaks through the sky happen like every couple of weeks somewhere on the planet. But the list of powerful and damaging events is quite a lot smaller. Of course, the big one is the Chicxulub impactor. That's the one that killed the dinosaurs. As I wrote in this doc, I don't know why I wrote it this way. I wrote it killed all of the main characters in the oft-forgotten Walt Disney live-action CG hybrid film, Dinosaurs. Did you ever see that one?
Wait. The Chicxulub?
Chicxulub.
I've never heard
that
word.
I even wrote down the pronunciation for myself. It's in Mexico. It's off the peninsula in Mexico.
Sure.
And that is where they think the one hit that killed all the dinosaurs. It's the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
66 million years ago. And it's estimated that the meteor itself was 6 miles wide. It sent plumes of sulfur-based gases and fine dust up into the atmosphere, blocking out the sun, giving us a period of time that would inspire the DreamWorks CG animated film, Ice Age. Remember that? Remember that squirrel?
I love that squirrel.
Ah, he's always trying to get that nut.
I know.
That crazy little squirrel.
Crazy squirrel. But how is he not equipped to cut through the ice?
The squirrel?
Yeah.
He's got to evolve.
I guess so, yeah. That's true.
You know, it's learning. Learn how to evolve. So luckily, the history of asteroid impacts so far has been chill by comparison, you know? We have not had our deep impact or Armageddon eras yet, just our Disney and DreamWorks eras.
Mm-hmm.
50,000 years ago, a big one hit Arizona, and you can still visit that crater today. The crater is 3,900 feet wide and 600 feet deep. I almost went to that when I was living on the road. Mm-hmm. It was just like a few hours too far out of my way. I remember that same day I went to the Smokey the Bear Museum, and I was like, should have gone to a crater. Why? Smokey the Bear Museum.
I love the phrase, when I was living on the road. That sounds so badass.
I was living on the road for a whole year.
Yeah.
I went to the Smokey the Bear Museum, and I saw Smokey the Bear's grave, and I pissed on his grave. Fuck you, Smokey.
Whoa.
That part's not true.
Anarchy.
That part's not true, but I did see his grave. There was a real bear. I didn't even know that before the museum.
Oh. Okay.
There's a real bear called Smokey the Bear, and he has a grave
at the Smokey the Bear Museum. And if you don't like him, you can piss on his grave.
I did not think he was real.
Ooh, okay. This is a real side fact, but it's just a fun trivia fact. Did you know, before Smokey the Bear, do you know what the mascot was for fire prevention?
What?
It's so badass. You have to look up pictures of it. It was a fire demon.
Fire demon.
The giant demon made of fire that went through the forest setting fires.
Before
the National Park Service had. And then there was a fire, and there's like this really, I guess you could still call it viral back then. This picture of a firefighter saving a little baby bear from a forest fire.
Oh.
And they called it Smokey the Bear, and then that's became the mascot.
I like Smokey better than the demon.
Oh, but the demon's badass. You should see the pictures. That's so scary. It's
yeah,
cool.
But people...
They went the opposite way. They went cute when they were going scary.
Well, I don't know, because I feel like the adorable nature of bears is what got people to say, you know what? Let's stop. Let's make sure we put our campfire out. We're killing
That's
the
true.
Cubs. You know?
I'm surprised they moved away from the baby bear. You know,
yeah.
He's just like, he's like McGruff the Crime Dark or whatever. He's just an anthropomorphized guy with a 9 to 5. Yeah.
Anyway, back to space.
Back to space. Get off of Earth. Yeah, so that big crater in Arizona, 3,900 feet wide, 600 feet deep. Pretty crazy. And that was 50,000 years ago. Probably the most notable impact event recorded in recent history, or at least in recorded history, was in 1908. It's called the Tunguska event. It was a large meteor, approximately 131 feet wide, and it exploded in the atmosphere over the Siberian forest.
Oh wait, I think I've heard about this. Yeah.
There's actually, Russia gets a lot of these. I guess it's just because Russia's big.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
One, my favorite one of these we're going to talk about next, also Russia. It left no crater, but the explosion flattened an estimated 800 square miles of forest.
Whoa.
I can even show you, there's one picture of the flattened trees. It's crazy. I'll show it to you in a second. The power of the explosion was equal to the power of 185 Hiroshima bombs.
Boom. Wow.
185 Hiroshimas. Yeah, sometimes a lot of these will explode in the atmosphere instead of actually impacting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like as they're coming down, just the friction and the heat is getting so intense, they just fucking blow up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's kind of worse because that actually is how we do atomic bombs. They blow up before they hit the ground for maximum damage. It felled 80 million trees.
Poor trees.
Isn't that crazy? They're just blown down in a radial position all around the black center.
So this makes me think of Lord of the Rings, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it's that scale of... It didn't really hurt too many people. I think a couple of people... I don't think anybody died. I think like a few people were injured.
How is that possible?
I mean, it was in the middle of the fucking Siberian forest.
Okay.
So yeah, there's just nobody around, really. There were a few people somewhere in the forest that
did get
hurt.
That's lucky.
But it sent seismic shockwaves that are registered as far away as England. Isn't that crazy?
Whoa.
I'm going to show you real quick. Can you see my screen?
Yeah. Wow.
See how they're all just like completely laying down?
Yeah.
So weird. It makes me think of crop circles.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like awkwardly all laying down. They're not broken. They're just laying down. That's what makes it weird. Anyways, strange sight, right?
Okay. Very much like crop circles.
Another really interesting event. This one I think is kind of cool. This is called the Chelyabinsk meteor.
Chelyabinsk.
It's spelt crazy. I wrote down the pronunciation for myself. Chelyabinsk meteor. This happened in 2013. This was a meteor roughly the size of a house.
Wow.
That ripped over Russia at 11 miles per second. You know, 11 miles a second. And exploded just 14 miles above the ground. And the shockwave blew out windows at a 200 square mile radius. It blew in doors and windows across the city, knocked people to the ground, threw them. 1,600 people reported to having been injured almost entirely from glass, which is a little icky.
just glass shards getting blown at them. But that one's interesting because the impact is so huge, but it's not like visceral. It's just like everything's getting thrown around.
Yeah.
Everyone's windows and doors getting blown in. Everybody's getting knocked down, but nobody's getting scorched. But here's the important thing about that. People in the city freaked out because that was not an NEO that anyone was tracking or knew was coming. It just completely blindsided them. So Russia and all of the citizens were like, what the fuck is this, World War III? Like, genuinely, they were like, we just get attacked by a foreign country. And then after that, and all of the panic afterwards, sort of like the whole world took note and said, you know what? It's kind of about time we get our shit together and tracking these asteroids, because we really don't have a good, like, connected web of information. You know, if you've got an asteroid, if you got telescopes on two different sides of the planet, they really need to be communicating with each other. If one of them is tracking a asteroid that could end up hitting the Earth on the other side, you know, by the time those orbits line up. So it was weird how long it took for us to have good communication. But after this 2013 event in Russia, everybody said, hey, let's take some action. So after that, we got some coordinated international efforts to track NEOs around the globe. And within NASA, they formed the Planetary Defense Coordination Office in 2016, just 3 years later. Its mission is to look for and catalog near-Earth objects such as comets, asteroids, and potentially hazardous objects, PHOs, that could impact Earth, as well as help the U.S. government prepare for potential impact event and coordinate efforts to mitigate and deflect potential threats if one is detected. So finally, not only are we tracking things better, sharing communication around the world, but we're also finally doing like really intense research efforts on how to mitigate asteroids if they are to come our way.
Yeah.
Oh, and they've got a badass logo. I'm going to show you their really cool logo.
Is this the international logo?
No, this is the NASA one. Isn't that cool?
Oh, yeah. That is cool.
It's like looking into the sky.
A little badge.
Yeah, I'd put it on. It's a little dorky, but it's cool.
Yeah, it looks like I'd want it embroidered onto my jacket.
Yeah, I would put it on a jacket.
I like it.
It's cool. So there are a few other scenarios kind of like those. Those are the more notable ones. But there's other explosions in the sky that knock people down. There's other near misses. In 2020, we had a pretty crazy near miss. It came within 230 miles of Earth. Pretty big one. So now it is time to talk about the pending asteroid that kicked off the whole idea for this episode, which is an asteroid that doesn't have as cool of a name as the other ones. We're talking about 2024 YR4. That's the one that's supposed to hit in 2032. The naming convention, I forget how it works, but it's like the letters correspond to a certain time of year. So the Y is like late in the alphabet because it's late in the year, something like that. So 2024 YR4 is the name of it. It's estimated to have a diameter of 174 to 222 feet. It's classified as an NEO. In early 2025, it had an impact rating of 3 on the Torino scale, which we'll get into in the next section. Okay. That's a scale for estimating danger with asteroids specifically. It had only a 1% probability to impact Earth on December 22nd, 2032. But by mid-February, more information came in, and they had risen the probability to 3.1%, which is a little higher than you want for a really big asteroid. But what's also notable is that after it crossed that 3%, that actually passed a threshold that had never been passed before, where the UN, for the first time in history, issued an asteroid warning.
Wow.
Yeah, so for that did happen recently. It wasn't pure hysterical headlines. It did spur an actual UN warning, which is the first time that's ever happened. But also, we haven't been like tracking things very attentively until like 1998. So there isn't that much time that we're dealing with. We're calling it a first. But fortunately, or unfortunately, depending on who you voted for, further observations and data have since lowered that probability to near zero. So it's not going to hit us. It's such a low probability now, it's negligible. But
I guess, I mean, maybe you're about to tell me. My first question is, like, how did it get to the point where it was near zero? Like, what changed that probability?
Well, I'll talk about it in the next section. I'm going to talk about how they actually find and track things. And it's just that with more data, you get more accurate. And it takes weeks or months to really accurately track the speed and orbit of something. Mm-hmm. You know, because when you first spot the object, you only know its position and time, right? You got to see where it goes to know both how fast it's moving and the actual trajectory of it. So it's just that, like, the numbers, it was just too early. The numbers weren't, we didn't have enough data for an accurate number.
So maybe a premature warning. Yeah.
So that's really all it was. It wasn't that nothing changed, except the data got more and more accurate. And as the data got more accurate, the less it was actually a problem.
Okay, UN, no more premature warnings, because then no one's going to believe you when the actual thing happens.
But also, scientists, don't tell us stuff until you need to, okay? Because you know what's going to happen is everyone on the planet's going to be pulling out their phone and making a dumbass TikTok about, like, oh, so there's a 3% chance, and they're acting like they're a scientist, like I'm doing right now. Don't do that.
Or people get their hopes up and just don't do that. Like, you're tugging at people's emotions.
I bet a bunch of hotel reservations were canceled for December 22nd, 2032.
I bet.
Yeah. But if you do want to have some fun, I don't know what the probability is, but supposedly it does retain some chance for hitting the moon. So,
poor moon. She's just up there chilling.
She didn't do nothing.
But here's the thing. If it hits the moon and it's big enough, can't that cause major issues for us?
Maybe. See, I thought about that, but I don't know.
I would think so, because it's responsible for so much on our planet.
I mean, I guess it depends where it hits as to, like, the ejecta. And even if it hits the moon, that's close.
I mean, I know the moon, she's a tough broad. She's got quite a few hits in her. But, yeah, if this one was do what they said it was going to do, if it hit us, then I don't know that the moon is any better at withstanding that hit than we are.
Yeah, that does all seem like we could get a strays from that. But
yeah.
We'll see.
You know, maybe we can cut a deal. Like, I want us to cut a deal with the galaxy to say, like, if you're not going to go big, go home.
Yeah. Go big. Like, either take us out or don't. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, we don't want shards of glass and to be thrown back in our homes. Either vaporize us or get out.
It's like, oh, you're going to cause an earthquake that makes me have to readjust my picture frames? Bitch, take down the building.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to close our asteroid talk by talking about how we classify, track, and plan to avert these future disasters. As we've seen so far, not all asteroids are created equal. Now, if we're talking about the really big, scary ones, there are about 950 planet killers. I could have had this in the earlier section. About 950 planet killers in near-Earth orbit, and NASA has nearly all of them identified and tracked. Some they estimate they probably don't have tracked yet, but you actually don't need to worry about the planet killer sized, because, one, there are none that impact us at all that we are tracking, but also they are the easiest ones to track because they are huge.
Massive. Yeah.
Yeah. They're immense in size, which means they reflect a ton of light and are extremely easy to spot. The ones we do need to be more afraid of are the city killers, the, you know, more in-between size ones, because they're a little bit harder to see amongst the stars. And NASA does think that they've currently only found about 40% of those.
Yeah.
So, a little scary, but we are getting better. We are improving. Yeah, a lot of our greatest near misses were city killers, but... And again, even a city killer impact, most of the time, is not going to hit a populated area, just because, look at a globe. It's a lot of water.
Yeah,
I know it's a gamble. It's a throw of the dice, but...
No, it is a throw of the dice. But I think I'm glad that you keep saying look at a globe, because when we're going about our everyday lives, we're not really aware of just how tiny we are, how tiny the land masses are in compared to everything else.
you ever encounter a globe and realize and go like, oh, well, yeah. I do that still as an adult. You come across a globe and you're like, oh, wow, it's fucking blue.
Yeah. Like, we got to get some perspective. And even when you, there's a lot of, I don't know if it's conspiracy theory or whatever it is, but they talk about like how maps are drawn and how it favors certain countries to look bigger than they actually are. And like, we don't realize how massive Russia is. We don't realize how massive Canada is. Like, it's huge.
It's true. Really, the only way to look is a map, because I mean, even unintentionally, you know, when you flatten a round object, it warps the middle and the top and bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, Russia. That's why, like, all the good meteor and comet stories are in Russia, because just, like,
it takes up so much of the Earth.
It's just so much landmass. Yeah.
And
we're not seeing the ones happening over the ocean, because fucking nobody's over there.
Yeah.
So it's, like, the most landmass, and there's people to see it, so. Yeah, so, city killers. Those are the ones we're concerned about. Only about 40% of them we have actively, like, tracked.
Okay.
And that's an estimate, of course. We don't know the ones we don't know, but... statistically, from what we've seen and however else they run those numbers, they think 40%. So how do we gauge the risk? We gauge the risk with the Torino scale.
Okay.
It's invented by a guy named something Torino. I didn't write it down. It's basically just a way for us to have a shared 1 to 10 scale to use globally for asteroids. I could show it to you real quick. This is the Torino scale. So, yeah, a 10 is a collision capable of causing a global climactic catastrophe. Such events occur once per 100,000 years or less.
Not 100,000 years or less. 100,000 years or less often.
Or less often. Right.
Yeah,
I said that backwards. I believe the one that was supposed to hit in 2032 was considered a 3 on this scale.
Oh, so dang. I thought it was like a 10.
Yeah, the way people talk about it.
Number 3 says 8 or 9.
Close encounter with 1% or greater chance of collision capable of causing localized destruction. So yeah, like that would be like a notable meteor strike. It wouldn't use this figuratively, earth-shattering. it wouldn't be earth-shattering.
Yeah.
But like if that hit the middle of Los Angeles, it would be localized, but it would do some crazy damage. It would be like something out of a movie. So a 3 out of 10 is still like a real ass hit. Anyways, I'm just showing you this. I think it's an interesting scale. Make sure everybody's on the same page when they're talking about these different threats. It's crazy that this is so recent. Like, why did we not have something like this so much sooner? A lot of my reading, I was actually finding that the idea of asteroids as a threat has like really battled with respectability for a long time. People have for a long time thought of it as a pure sci-fi concept. Like I said at the top, despite the fact that it's fucking happened many times before, but people think it's like a Hollywood movie. And it's kind of only within the last few decades that people aren't laughing it off. People, I think, for a long time would even think it's as if you were talking about aliens when you talk about an asteroid strike. It's like so out there.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, it's happened many times. We see comets. I don't know why it's such a weird thing. So it's sad that it's not since like the 90s that we're really like putting a good foot forward. And it's not until the last 10 years that we're like really making strides on deterrence. So oddly recent, all of this.
I also wonder too if it's like you get so caught up in the discovery that you don't get it. You don't think of it as a defense as well. Like I think NASA is great for discovery. Like we learn so much from them, so they're gathering information. But to also be defense, I think Space Force, that concept of like having a Space Force, is not something that they readily thought about. I can see you not thinking about that and just kind of being not egotistical, but kind of being short-sighted about there's so much to learn about space, but not necessarily defend ourselves from the things that threaten us in space.
Such a good point to bring up too, because I have long been a defender of Space Force. People think it's dumb because they think Donald came up with it. He had fucking nothing to do with it. He took credit because he's a dumbass. He's a con man. It annoys me how so much people. It's also because it's got a dumb name. Admittedly, it sounds like
Space Force is stupid.
Space Force is a stupid fucking name. But look at that other organization. That's a cool name and a cool logo. They should have done something like that.
It is a cool logo. It is a cool logo.
But yeah, it's like the things that Space Force does are actually extremely important. And it's annoying to me that it's a whole like national joke. That we'll get into
should,
too much.
They should rebrand. Is that
they I should rebrand because Trump's tied to it and it's got a dumb name. But
and then they made a they made a show about it.
I made a Netflix show. I was like, ugh.
Yeah. So they need to rebrand.
Yeah.
For the good of the efforts, they need to rebrand.
Yeah.
That's my take.
It's like
rebrand Space Force.
There's a bunch of crazy satellites and stuff in the sky. They're not. The thing is, people think it's like laser ships. It's like that's not what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're tracking satellites and managing space in a way that's super important. Just saying.
Oh, you know what else is coming up? I'm thinking about this. So we have the Torino scale. That's what makes me think of like some Italian.
The Torino scale.
The Torino scale. What's the Torino scale doing in the way of now that we're monitoring it and we're analyzing the threat? What are you going to do about it, Torino? Are we going to shoot it out of the air?
Oh, Torino's doing anything about it. He's just giving us, he's giving us
who's
a shirt.
Shooting it out of the air is what I want to know.
Put, strap me up to a missile and give me a bazooka and send me up there. Put the space helmet on me. Give me a Colt revolver. I'll take out the media.
You know what? In every single...
We're taking down Italians too this episode.
In every single like Armageddon-esque movie, there's always a guy like that that's like, just give it to me. And right. I'll go out there. I'm just crazy enough to do
there's
it.
Independence Day. You got Randy Quaid going up there. Dr. Strangelove. You got the guy riding it.
Yeah.
Of course, that one's satire, so maybe its own class. But yeah.
There's always somebody who's just crazy enough to do it. And for some reason has the specific skill set that's unrelated to space whatsoever, but can take this down.
I spent my whole life pumping gas and eating Doritos. And now I'm met with my moment.
To make something of myself.
Yeah. Fly into the ship of an alien race.
But do they talk about that? Like, what happens now that we know and we monitor and we're looking for these things? We're like, okay, it's moving. It's doing stuff. Are we blowing it out? Blowing it up?
Genuinely, I mean, we're still getting there. Genuinely, we're doing great. That is the positive of this. We are doing great. We're moving fast. We should have been doing this kind of stuff a long time ago. But also, there are places the space program is now that we couldn't have done those things a long time ago anyways.
Yeah.
Super cool. Just about to get to it. But so how do we track? Well, we have telescopes on Earth and in our orbit that track all the little dots of the sky. You look at all the dots and then you track the dots against yesterday's dots.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly you figure out which dots are moving in relation to the other dots. It's really like that tedious. Because you got the background stars and you have to pick out what is not a star.
Yeah.
So after a given point of light is tracked for a while, we can estimate its size and orbital path. It takes a lot of observation and data and math over the course of weeks or months. And really, like I was saying earlier, we haven't had good detection means until about 1998. Uh-huh. So we don't have super reliable data over a really long period of time for this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
At least not the level of data that we've had since 1998. In 2014... scientists estimated that several dozen asteroids in the 20 to 40 foot range fly by Earth at a distance closer than the moon every year. Okay, so that's a lot. But only a
it is.
But even only a fraction of these are actually detected. So we still got a little bit to do. But also, we don't need to be as scared of things that come in at an angle. The things that come straight at us.
Mm-hmm.
Are both harder to track because they're coming straight at us. They're harder to detect. You know, they're not moving against the background stars.
Yeah.
And then they hit obviously harder. Things that come in at an angle are going just right past us. If it grazed us, it's not nearly as bad as something that hits us like a bullseye.
Yeah, it's like a bullet.
Yeah, those like a bullet. Others, if it comes in at an angle, a lot of things come in at an angle, not as bad. So the Planetary Defense Program I was talking about earlier sponsors programs around the world so that we can all use the same data. And all these different programs have information about orbits and sizes and shapes of shared tracked objects. So we're all, the only way we can track these things is all working together. That's the thing. It's like scientists communicate around the world, but
there needs to be a super, super, super coordinated and collaborated effort in order for any of this to be particularly useful. So we're on a good track. It's just it's oddly recent, like the last decade, but we're on a really good track. So let me ask you, if you were tasked with having to get an asteroid to not hit Earth, what would you do?
I don't know that it would help to blow it, like try to blow some piece of it, like to try to get to it and implant explosives to maybe take it off its track. Because I don't think we could just destroy it entirely. I don't know that we possess anything that could do that. But I've thought about getting to it, implantation, explode to hopefully change the trajectory. Or some sort of sling-based system that does the same thing. I just can't imagine what the sling-based system looks like. I don't know.
What do you mean sling-based?
Like something that wraps around it, although this thing is
like
massive.
A lasso?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like something that wraps around it and helps to change the trajectory over time. Not an immediate, like, oh, we take it and we sling it in a different direction. No, I think it's something that takes it out, like moves it over time. The reason why I thought about those two methods is because just in case blowing stuff up is causing another set of problems in space, maybe we gently suggest that it goes this direction instead.
Yeah. You thought things out in the way that scientists have also thought things out. But
I thought this was very silly.
But they've acted on these thoughts and tested things, so I can tell you the results of this thinking.
Okay, please do.
So, potential thing number one that people like to say is, of course, blow it up. But there are some problems. You could use a nuke, but and there's also different ways you could use the nuke. So, what you don't want is to blow it up into a million pieces.
No.
Because depending on the size of those pieces, you may have just made your problem infinitely worse. Because now, instead of one big thing coming, you've got a million asteroids, and now they're radioactive. So, you know, and it's impossible. Then now you got a million things you can't hold on to.
And you've increased the probability of it hitting, I think.
Yeah, you've probably just made a big mess, and they're still all going to hit Earth. And now it's a big shower of shrapnel. So if you made if you blow it up and the pieces are small enough, they'll all burn up in the atmosphere, but that's not a very calculated way of going about it.
Right.
And you may very well have made things way worse. If you're going to blow it up with a nuke, you better be damn sure that the whole thing's vaporized. But here's also a weird thing, though, that is maybe not so obvious. At a certain size, or like over a certain size for very large things, if an asteroid has enough of its own gravitational pull, after you blow it up into a million pieces, those pieces might just get pulled right back together by their own gravitational pull.
That is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
And then you're just like right back where you started.
That sounds like you know, art imitates life kind of thing. Like when you watch in movies, things reassemble.
Yeah, like a Terminator comes back together after you blow them up or something.
That's so cool. Asteroids are badass.
Especially because like they already are just a pile of rocks, you know?
Yeah.
Like a comet's just like ice and rocks.
It's
and
like,
shit. You blow it up and it's like...
It explodes and says, I am inevitable, and brings it back together. I love it. That's so badass. I want to be an asteroid.
Yeah. Unstoppable.
Yeah.
You nice try, humans.
Here's a weird one I read. A very inobvious way to use a nuke. You could use it to irradiate one side of the asteroid with X-rays, which would hypothetically get one side of the asteroid so hot that it acts as its own propulsion, with the hot end pushing it forward like a rocket. Not sure that's particularly practical or how effective it would be, but thought that was kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Here's another one that seems like potentially practical, but maybe not influential enough. You could take a large ship, fly it close to the asteroid. And again, this would only really work with small ones, but use the gravitational pull of being near that asteroid to just influence its own orbit. And kind of like what you were saying, just move it away. But really, you could just fly close to it because it's just gravitational influence. You don't need to actually latch onto it. You're just kind of like, hey, come over with me. Hey, come over with me.
Yeah.
But here, here's the good one. And here's the one that we have tested out thanks to that new agency. They did a experiment called the DART mission, which stands for Double Asteroid Redirection Test. So here's what they did. So this is just from 2022. I'm telling you, we're living in the we're living in recent times for doing anything. In 2022, NASA took a school bus-sized satellite and they kamikaze'd it into an asteroid about the size of the Washington Monument to see what sort of permanent effects that that impact would have on its orbital path. So basically, they found just like a perfect case study environment. They found a little moonlet that is orbiting around a larger asteroid. And they waited for that to end up with its collective orbit near Earth so they could send out the satellite towards it. And what they wanted is why that's such a perfect scenario is that they can hit the little one and then proportionally check its orbit in relation to the big one. And it's like, it's not one that was in danger of hitting Earth or anything. And even after we hit it, we're not accidentally sending more things to Earth. Actually, we're sending things into Mars. But hey, who cares? Nobody lives there, as far as I know. Yeah, the little rock was called Dimorphos, and they
That's
were gonna.
That's a badass name.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Dimorphos, and so they're gonna hit Dimorphos.
I want to name my next dog that.
Dimorphos the dog.
Yeah.
So they're gonna hit Dimorphos and see how it changes in relation to the bigger one. It's orbiting called Didymos. Shout out to our Diddy episode. The impact happened at 13,000 miles per hour. That's fast.
Yeah, that's super fast.
And you know what's also cool? It came with this little like a toaster-sized robot that popped out the back of it. And we have photos.
Ooh.
Isn't that cool? So I can show you that. We have an actual photo of Dimorphos.
Weird.
And it's funny how much it just looks like fucking pile of rocks. It's kind of fun how like innocuous it is, but how clear the picture is. It's a really good picture. What they had decided was that if they were capable of changing the orbit of Dimorphos by 1%, they believed that as a case study, that would be enough to prove this tactic to be enough to avoid disaster, right? We're not trying, instead of trying to destroy asteroids coming towards Earth, let's just change their orbit enough that they're just not in our orbit at the same place, same time, right?
Yeah.
They're still crossing our orbit, but it's just they can't be in the same place at the same time in our orbit.
Yeah, yeah.
So just moving their orbit a little bit. And a lot of times, I don't feel like I've really hit this. And when we track these things and we're calculating their orbits, that goes far into the future. Most of these, once we've identified them, if it's a problem, usually it's not like the other one we heard. Usually we got like 30 years to figure it out. So the better we get at this, the more we'll have a few decades heads up. And that's more than enough time to influence the orbit of something.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. They got this big satellite. They sent it out. It was very complicated because you can't remote control a satellite from Earth. The delay in communication is too long. So it has to have a system where it's sort of like a homing missile. It has to figure out its own trajectory and do it all independently. And it did it. And it nailed Dimorphos. And we got cool pictures. And at the end, when they got in all the data, remember they only need to change the orbit by 1%? They changed it by 4.5%.
Wow.
It's like wildly effective. This is like a great way to work to do this. They wanted to change the orbit time by 73 seconds. They cut it down by 33 minutes.
Whoa.
So
this was wildly effective.
Wildly successful and a really good sign for being able to use this tactic on a larger scale.
Yeah.
So out of all this data from DART, we've learned a lot about how to avert our own future asteroid strikes, not by obliterating the rock, but just pushing it just enough not to cross us.
Yeah.
So thanks to the Planetary Defense Coordination Office. I thought that was a really cool mission to read about. And also thanks to them, we now have a new thing called the International Asteroid Warning Network, which has thus far been super successful in just creating a very fast communicating and transparent communication worldwide about
these
things.
Oh, look, an international organization that's actually working.
Hey, but let us have one, okay? Let us have one.
At least it's the fun one with missiles.
I love that.
I found a website that I thought I liked. They had 5 steps for addressing asteroids.
Just read real quick because I thought there was a good way to break down what we need to do in every asteroid situation. 1, find. 2, track. 3, characterize. That's the Torino scale. 4, deflect. That's DART. And then 5, coordinate and educate. What do we learn from it? How do we disseminate that information?
Mm-hmm.
How do we progress?
I love that. Concise, clear. It feels good. I love it.
So yeah, there's a lot of shit coming at the Earth all the time. And we've had centuries of not really tracking it too well. I was really shocked that some of the things that we have, we've only had for about a decade.
It kind of makes sense to me, though. Like, I feel like it's such a foreign entity.
To be fair, tracking, it's hard to do. It's not an easy thing to do. So
yeah, my brain still can't. I mean, I understand the very basics of like, here are the dots. Tomorrow, I'll take another picture of the dots. See the difference between the dots.
Yeah.
I understand that. But to be able to put together a missile that has its own homing technology that will target something in our galaxy is insanely smart.
It's cool.
That's a level of brain power that I will never possess.
And to be like, you know what? We've got so much. We're going to have a little WALL-E photographer robot that pops out because fuck it.
Okay. Actually, when
this
it
is Didymos, by the way, on the screen.
Yeah, it is just a bunch of rocks.
Isn't that cool?
That is very cool.
It's just a bunch of rocks.
It looks very plain.
I know. It is. It's so plain. It's just like, it looks like a ball of dough. And I think it's just the way gravity's holding it together is makes it really elliptical and round. That doesn't look so small, but so round. Like
it looks
an
like
egg.
A dirt egg.
Yeah. It's like exactly the shape of an egg.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I like, there is a video I saw where somebody was in the room where they were watching the mission, you know, the control room, talking about how nervous everybody was. And he said, one guy is like just about to hit, spilled coffee all over himself. And I love, that is something that always like pulls at my heartstrings watching scientists get really excited about this. Because you work for a decade on something and it all comes down to this moment.
And the thing is, like, it's not a complicated idea, but the execution is very complicated.
Yeah.
Like, you're just saying, let's build something that nudges it.
Yeah.
That's not a difficult idea. You literally saw me sit here spitballing shit, and they were like, okay, let's take that one and let's try that one.
Yeah.
But then it's the act of, okay, how do we take all the information we know about space generally? How do we take all the information we know about materials and science and yada, yada? How do we take that to accomplish the nudge? That's the part that's fascinating. And then it's like, holy shit, it actually worked!
Yeah. It's also like, it's also not overthinking things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like everything's so complicated, but also, I was surprised, you can see, I should have put it in the folder. I'll send you afterwards if you're interested. The pictures of the actual thing, it just kind of looks like a regular satellite. Mm. Like, you would think, in my head, if I were inventing this, it'd be like, it would look like one of those things from like Robot Wars or something. It's going to have like big fists on it. Super powered fists and punch the asteroid. It's going to have some kind of lever act, karate chop action or something. But it doesn't even look like it's made for impact. It looks like a regular ass satellite. It's like a central part and it's got like solar panels that go far. That's all it is. It's just like a thing with mass moving fast. And that's it. It doesn't look like something made to impact at all.
I guess the solar panel of it all makes sense because of the energy needed once it's out there gathering it from the sun. But I imagined it as a missile.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a square. Looks like it could be like a GameCube with wings is what it looks like. It's just a square box with a little propulsion on one side.
Yeah, super cool. I love being excited about space missions, successful space missions.
They don't get enough praise. Like, I think we so easily just like quote, like, oh, this astronaut was the first to do X, Y, and Z. And maybe you were someone in control center where your math formula is something that unlocked something that allowed this to happen. Yeah. And you are so freaking important in order for this mission to have gone on successfully. And like, we need to talk about those math wizards.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
People are so
really cool.
Smart. I wish I were smart like that.
If we were smart, you know what I'd do? Start a podcast.
We need more smart people starting podcasts.
Yeah. Stop leaving it up to us dum-dums. Step up. Step. I don't want to have to do this.
Although I will say the smart people who have podcasts, when I was researching everything for Organoids, I was like, whoa, this is way too rich for my blood.
Yeah.
Maybe they got their own world.
Yeah, they definitely have their own world.
All smart kid stuff.
So that's the show. Be sure to follow Happy Doomsday Pod everywhere but Twitter. And until next time, Happy Doomsday.
Happy Doomsday.